This is a guest episode from my radio show, Saturday nights at 9 p.m. on KRLA here in Southern California, and I wanted to share it with my Salesforce Trails and Trials listeners as it does relate to Salesforce as well as additional AI topics and apps that impact Salesforce professionals and how they get work done.
To the John Klein Show, where we spotlight the human side of technology. Your host, John Klein, a Salesforce solution architect, a strong leadership coach, and your guide to building stronger teams in this fast-paced, AI-driven world.
You're not going to lose your job to AI. You're going to lose your job to somebody who uses AI. Your company is not going to go out of business because of AI. Your company is going to go out of business because another company used AI. There's no question about that.
From conflict resolution to communication tips, we dive deep into real-world strategies that put people at the heart of everyday tech innovation. So whether you're an IT leader, a startup founder, or just curious about better collaboration,
there will come a point where no job is needed.
Tune in, call in, and join our conversation. And now, your host, John Klein.
Great to be with all of you today. It's been a great week, and I trust yours has been well. I look forward to hearing about it. You can leave us a message at 803 John Klein, 803 JONCLINE. We always love to hear from you. We'd love to feature some of you on the show. So 803 John Klein. You can also email us at power@johnklein.com, spelled the same. We love hearing from our listeners and appreciate getting your perspective and providing more of what you need. Today we have a very interesting show. We're going to talk a little bit about some predictions that have come out that are fascinating and research-based, a little bit of a perspective on Gen AI, but really we're going to dive in a bit to some of the causes of tech project failure and some data that's come out as it relates to AI project failure. And this is really for many of you who have tech projects going on at the office, right? You have, I mean, who doesn't have a tech project going on at the office these days, right? But the key here is understanding what are the dynamics of those tech projects and really what are the factors that move the project towards success? Because it might really surprise you what the leading causes of tech project failure are and what you can do about it. And that's going to help you not only recognize these risks in your own organizations, but also recognize who are the people and what are the patterns that are going to actually help move this ball forward in a good way, and who you can become as it relates to being one who can be successful and help move those projects forward. So one aspect I wanted to highlight, if you follow the news at all, you may have heard about an aspect called AI 2027. I actually heard this on KRLA a few days back. They mentioned it as AI 27, but it's ai-2027.com. And essentially, it is a prediction from several kind of teachers, researchers, and a writer who try and put together a picture of if we were to paint a path from where we are today to where we're going to be 3 years from now, and then try and think a little bit about what would be the next 5 years, what would that look like? And there are lots of intriguing things in that story. I encourage you to read it. I would love to get your feedback, 803 John Klein or power@johnklein.com. I'd love to hear what you think. There is a choose your own ending. I'd love to hear which one you chose and why. But a couple aspects I want to highlight here. First of all, the story I think follows a somewhat typical or more common timeline of what we believe AI will accomplish for us as a society. So anyone who's read 1984, Brave New World, maybe you've read the Scythe, the three-part series there, there's certainly a utopian vision that sometimes turns dystopian as it relates to this centralizing of insight, information, measurement, listening, watching, all of that. There's definitely some of those aspects in this story. I'm not going to give away too much. I want you to do it, but certainly some teasers might be interesting. So there's this vision that by having more information and by centralizing more information, we solve all of humanity's problems: sickness, aging, I just want to step back and think, when you're reading this, is that realistic? Do we really think that that's possible just by aggregating information? Isn't there something bigger than AI at play here? And the hubris for us to think that our technology, as we aggregate it, is really going to help us escape some of these more endemic problems to the human condition and to our world. So it goes back into last week we talked a little bit about how we want to recognize, in the same way we recognize people-first dimensions in the midst of technology, we want to recognize that there's a worldview that is often embedded within AI and how it is expected to be leveraged and how it's being recommended to you. So definitely recommend AI-2027.com. Check that out, and I'd love to hear your feedback. Another aspect of that that I read this week, I mentioned that there's a gentleman named Stephen Klein. He's an MBA from Harvard and has quite a diverse background. He's a lecturer at UC Berkeley. And I follow him on LinkedIn, suggest you do as well. That's Stephen Klein, spelled the conventional way, S-T-E-P-H-E-N and then K-L-E-I-N. And he's definitely in the AI space. I've been testing out his product called Curiouser.ai, and he's going to be on the show on a future episode. And the purpose of his product is to slow us down and to help us be more thoughtful and more to exhibit more of our intelligence and our ability to think more clearly if we have a reasoning partner, one that can help us kind of drive these aspects. Now, something he mentioned to me actually just today, not to me, but on his post, he highlighted that one of the aspects that seems to be happening here with AI and as it relates to the business use of AI is taking this diversification and this kind of distributing thought across lots of different visions and perspectives and thinking, letting them compete in the marketplace of ideas, which is a very healthy thing. Certainly, right, as the American experiment demonstrates, it is the most successful way at this point that we know how to build a great society. But one of the challenges with AI is that it seems to be reversing that trend a little bit by aggregating a lot of these thoughts into a centralized tool where now everybody consults and reaches out to the centralized tool to understand what it thinks. And in the case of generative AI, now it's actually producing content according to the way it thinks and producing things in my voice according to how it thinks. And if I'm not in the loop, it very quickly could be speaking on my behalf with perspectives that I do not support. So I thought that idea of essentially centralizing thought was a fascinating read. And you can go to my LinkedIn profile. That's linkedin.com/in/John Klein. And you can see my comments on his post. But definitely recommend you follow him. I find him to be a great voice and one that really aligns with our people first power in the age of AI mantra here at the show. So there's a little bit catching up on your week. Definitely let me know what you think about both those elements, 803-JohnKlein or power@johnklein.com. Now, let's go over a little bit. I got a packed agenda for our show today, and I've actually pushed callers into a future episode. So we're going to talk a little bit about project failure. And the reason this is important is certainly if you're a business leader, you are going to put together a project, you're going to hire some consultants. This is a very expensive endeavor. And so I want to do what I can to assist in how you might make that decision. What are some aspects you want to look for in the people you hire and the consultants that you use? Certainly, anyone can reach out to me. One of my companies is a team that delivers Salesforce projects and AI-related aspects, where Salesforce is one of the data sources. So I'm happy to help. But really, I want to bring to light some things that you may not have thought about or even recognized. So first off, did you know that looking at data from 25,000 plus projects over the last 30 years, 30 plus years really, the data shows that somewhere between 45% and 95% of technical projects fail. That is an incredible number. When I first read that, I could not believe that that was actually true. Especially on the 95% side, these projects tend to be much, much larger. The bigger projects that span longer periods of time, they have a higher success rate. So it kind of presents a paradox there, right? The longer you stay in the project, like one particular project before you get delivering that to your stakeholders or your customers, the higher risk it has for failure. And so you can start to see certain trends emerge about how to deal with that, and we're going to talk about a few of those. And some people are thinking, well, John, can't AI just help solve this problem? You know, couldn't I just apply AI to this and that would bring down my failure rate? Well, first off, if you know your failure rate, well done to you. Because I can't imagine people, when's the last time someone came up to you at the bar and was like, hey, John, dude, I was part of this really cool failed project the other day. Let me tell you about it. Nobody has ever asked me that. And most of the time, when it comes to a project that failed and didn't go well, they don't include it on their resume. They don't put it up on LinkedIn. They don't really want to talk about it anymore because it didn't go well. And so we're just going to go ahead and sweep that under the carpet and leave that for something that happened in my past and chalk it up to learning. And this is part of the reason why people don't recognize how many tech projects fail to the cost of billions, maybe trillions a year across the country, because no one wants to talk about it. And so I want to talk about it, because unless we understand how projects fail, how can we hope to go about letting them succeed and enabling them and doing the work necessary so that they do succeed? Because many times I think we're asking the wrong questions or observing the wrong information, and so we essentially try and solve the problem with elements that not only don't help but sometimes make it worse. So a 2019 study from MIT had a lot of detail that can help us here related to AI and whether AI can actually assist this process. So we're going to talk through more of these details with a couple examples on these project failures. When we come back, we're going to talk through that 2019 MIT study about AI so you can see whether that actually has hope for helping you. And then we're going to go through five key areas that are the top five reasons projects fail and what you can do about it to make sure that your project succeeds. We'll see you on the other side. Now, we're talking a lot about great tools and ways for you to learn AI in a very safe environment. So I'd like to talk about the People First AI Playground. This is a location where you can go online and have specific projects that are set for you that coordinate with our show, as well as have historical projects from prior episodes. This gives you a safe place to learn how to use these tools, the terminology and vernacular around them, the places where it wouldn't be great to use them given your People First perspective, and you can be there with like-minded people who are also trying to learn and offer their perspective. So check back. You can go to johnkline.com/the trail, and you can learn more about the People First AI Playground so you can follow along with us and really grow in your own skills to be more capable than you thought you could be and make sure that AI continues to place a cape on you rather than escape from your future job. Do you have a challenging Salesforce or AI project? DevPod is your on-demand partner for success. With decades of expertise, 30-plus Salesforce certifications, and a people-first approach, we help you reduce risk and deliver real results. From solution design and business analysis to project management, DevPod scales to your needs, no matter how big or small. Ready to supercharge your success? Call me at 626-400-6281 or visit johnkline.com/dev. I answer my own calls and would love to help you move forward. All right. Thank you. I'm delighted to have my youngest son in the engineering room today. And that's one thing I love about being an entrepreneur, is being able to include my family in my business plans and just let them. So many things in life are learned, really not by they're really caught, not taught, right? They're learned by watching. So wonderful, and thank you all for listening in and enabling that. So when we went to our break, I highlighted that there are very specific details of why projects fail. And so I wanted to highlight a couple examples here. We talked about 45 to 95% of tech projects failing generally. And so Salesforce projects really just fall right into that as an example of a technical project that fails. And this 2019 MIT study highlighted that when it comes to AI projects, 70% of AI projects fail. And at that number, this was back in 2019. They estimated at the time that as AI gets better and things get even more complex, that that number is expected to rise to as high as 85%. So what I see there is that rather than AI being able to significantly help my technical project succeed, it actually might add more risk if not used in the right way, because those projects fail at or higher than the rate of your standard tech project. And the reason I'm highlighting this for you is in your business, you're going to have a tech project. Maybe it's a Salesforce project, SAP, you know, it could be a Microsoft thing, whatever it might be. Technology is an ever-present part of our future in business. And so making sure these projects succeed are critical, and they might be valuable not only to the business bottom line, but they might be an important part of your advancement. Right? What's in it for you is really important here. And so thinking about how do you get promoted? How do you get recognized? How do people see that, man, when you put a team together and you have a goal, you make sure that that actually happens? Because I'm sure in your mind right now as you're listening to this, you can think of, when did I have a project that failed? You know, when was I part of something that was expected to accomplish something and actually didn't? Commonly what happens here is that the project goes on so long, people forget about what exactly did we set out for at the beginning to do here, because we've lost our way a little bit and many projects are just abandoned. So let's look at some examples of why these projects fail, and then we can look at some ways that you can put into practice how to prevent this and make sure these projects succeed, because you don't want to lose your team. A failed project often, right, sometimes people resign, they leave the business. It really leaves a bad taste in people's mouth. It has a negative impact on culture. I mean, there's so many bad implications here. So these, what I'm going to talk about here, they come from another company I have, which is the People First Method, which helps teach soft skills to technical professionals. And these are the things that at DevPod and People First CRM, these are the things that we employ as we go and implement these projects on behalf of clients. So if you need any assistance there, you can reach out. Same thing, 803 John Klein. You can reach out to me on LinkedIn/John Klein. But let's talk through what these are. So the first reason why across all the data that I have, and I'm using Notebook LM to capture all of these sources of data that I found. I have multiple reports here that others have done, like Kensington, that look over thousands and thousands of projects over decades. And so I'm using that, as I recommended on last week's episode, that you'd make use of as well. So number one cause of failure is poor requirements definition and lack of clear goals in the project. So this is understanding, do we actually all recognize what the finish line looks like? And you've probably seen this in your boardroom at the office. If you were to ask a question that says, all right, everybody, we don't want to increase sales by 20% by next year. How do we do that? Well, how likely is it that everybody in the room is going to have the same idea as to how to improve that? Unlikely. Now, let's say you all come to a point where you negotiate, what are the ideas? People come up with different things like better messaging, better creative, rebranding, better products, hire better salespeople, better CRM, you know, whatever it might be. So let's say you agree and you're like, okay, let's do, you know, A, B, and C. And then now you ask a follow-up question and says, okay, great, so we've decided to do A. What does the finish line look like? How do we know when to buy the champagne when A has been accomplished? How likely is it that they are all going to come up with the same finish line as it relates to when A is accomplished? Let's say, you know, we need to hire better salespeople, or we need to have a better sales process in our CRM. Are they really going to agree on what the finish line looks like? Or even whether or not the picture of what that looks like is different? You know, the finish line is one thing, but you have to actually run the path of the race to get there, and they might have a different path to get there, even if the finish line was somewhat similar. So you can see the variability there, and many people just assume. They might have kind of a general picture of like what they want, some metrics in the project. Maybe they have kind of an overview of what they'd like to see. But that's got to really drill its way down into all the details of the project. And who's responsible for that? Like, does that happen by accident? You may have heard of something called the second law of thermodynamics, which essentially is just a fact of nature that things generally lead from order to disorder. Now, don't tell my kids, even though they're in the room next to me here, but I can definitely see the truth of this in their bedrooms. That it goes from order to disorder very quickly. And this is true with your project. Unless there is some external force that is driving organization, clarity, that is keeping people focused on what it is that we're trying to do at each stage and down to each dimension, then it's going to fall into disorder. We can't assume that it's just going to happen or that technology alone. You might have a great tool like ClickUp or Jira, Asana. There's a zillion of these tools. The tools do not solve the problem because the tools have to be filled in by humans. And then all these tools also have AI companions and co-pilots. That's also not going to solve the problem. They can enhance your ability and your team's ability to solve the problem, or a consultant you may hire. It might enhance their ability and add efficiency. But unless we're focused on clearly defining what is the outcome we're seeking, how exactly do we define that together? That would be called maybe the acceptance criteria, right, of not only the individual items but the specific project. Now we can understand, okay, we have a common vision. We have clarity on where we're going, what it means, what's the definition of done, and when we can celebrate. Can you believe that that's the number one reason why projects fail? Is lack of clarity on what does success mean here? How do we actually know when this is done? That was amazing to me, because how many technical certifications are going to solve that? How much more knowledge about Salesforce or Microsoft or SAP or whatever platform you might have is going to solve that problem? In my opinion, none. In fact, it might be someone in your organization who has maybe a bit less technical skills, but they are an excellent communicator. They are an excellent workshop facilitator. When people sit down at the table and they're in the room, they're able to bring out the best in those people. They're able to dig in and really mine gold out of those conversations and turn those things into real future deliverables that we can all get behind and agree to. That, to me, is a people-first priority, because that's what it requires. In order for us to surface the right information, to get alignment, even where people disagree, they can still differ and commit if they're heard, listened to, and they're suggestions are evaluated. So that's just the first reason why projects fail. And you may find that in your organization. You may find that, you know what, we don't spend as much time on that because we're just so excited to get started. We just want to get into it and we'll figure it out as we go. And look, there's some of that. You know, when you agree on the finish line, whether you're going to turn right at that corner or turn left at that corner, you can leave that up to decide. But understanding what does the future outcome look like? What is the reality in the business that is going to be different And how will we measure that so that we can all agree that we know when to buy the champagne? That is the key factor. And AI and technology is not going to deliver it. Your people and the people you're working with are the ones who are going to deliver that. So we'll talk about number two on the other side of the break. Welcome back. And can you believe that we've only gone through the first one? And you might have been surprised like I was when I first saw that. And so those are the things that if that's the number one cause of project failure, that's where you want to go back and think about, am I working with the right people? Do they actually have a solution for helping us make sure we do not have a poor definition of what the target is and what that outcome looks like? Now, let's talk about the second one. This one is ineffective communication and poor stakeholder management. Now, I'll give you an example. I look on my podcast at SalesforceTrailsAndTrials.com. We talk about what we call tales from the fails. And this is essentially where we analyze a debacle of a project and we figure out, why did this fail? And one of them we looked at was Foxmire Drug. And it was an organization, a multi-billion dollar organization, that took on a fairly large ERP project. And ultimately, as a result of the project, not only did they not achieve what they were looking to, but it drove the company into bankruptcy and ultimately liquidation. That is the potential of not getting one of these projects right, especially when it's large. I mentioned the higher part of that failure rate, 95%, is reserved for those projects that are really, really sizable. And this one was definitely in that arena. Now, it was focused on SAP, but the issue here of why I wanted to raise it is in my research related to this project, one of the critical factors that resulted in its failure are two things. One, when it talks about poor stakeholder management as the second leading cause of failure, this project had a warehouse component, right, where you have people on forklifts, you got putting stuff on shelves, there's some inventory components. There's a lot of unique processes that go on in a warehouse. There's a lot of ways that people do things because that's what works, and we don't change it because we want to make sure it works and we got to be on the same page. Those aren't always well documented. There's a lot of tribal knowledge, trial and error, and people just figuring out what they do. And there's a lot of concentration of responsibilities. So you might have one person who's actually managing three or four of these elements. And just in their role, because people are dependent on them, they don't take vacations that often. And they're just really the one who handles this. So anybody else there, if they have a question about how do we do this inventory process, they're going to say, well, we go and we ask Jane because she's the expert. Now, in a situation where you're going to implement a piece of software into that warehouse, what do you think the number one thing you'd want to make sure happens? You're right. You want to make sure Jane is part of those meetings. You want to make sure Jane's insights are gathered as part of the, you know, what are the stories and the discovery, right? What you might call requirements. We need to make sure she's involved. Well, in this project, they just assumed that the managers, the people who manage these people, they know enough to be able to do this. And in fact, the managers might have had the attitude that says, look, I know everything these people do, okay? I'll give you whatever we need from them. And because I want to make sure that we keep what needs to happen part of the conversation here, not whatever their preferences are and, you know, all the other things that they might want. You can start to see the political dimensions and the attitudes that sometimes come out through these conversations. So they chose not to include the stakeholders. They chose to include the managers. Now, when I say stakeholder, I mean the people who are actually going to be using the tool. They just included the managers here as though they knew. And, of course, at the end, you can probably imagine the end of this story. is the project was way off. And when they actually asked the people like Jane to say, hey, we have this great new software product. Why don't you check it out and let us know what you think? Well, what do you think her first perspective was? Nobody asked me about this. Did you guys want any feedback earlier before you built it? How emotionally committed is she going to be, or anyone for that matter, given the fact that they're just directed to do something without any feedback? Probably not great. You know, adoption is beyond training, and there's a kind of social, emotional, and technical aspect to it. So even someone who knows the right thing to do based on the new software, if they weren't engaged in the process, they're not committed to the success of the business because they weren't considered. In fact, there's probably things that are onerous about it that they could have avoided, and even things that were delivered and developed that they no longer use or need, because that's not how we do things anymore. It might have been 6 months ago when the manager heard about it, but nobody talked to us to recognize that that's been changed based on the marketplace, some compliance rules, some other factor. So the key is we got to find a way to incorporate the people, the stakeholders who are really going to leverage the tool. And it sounds easy, but in many corporate environments, there's a political climate sometimes that discourages this, that maybe people don't want to engage other people, or they might even be vested in someone else's failure inside the organization. And so working with a partner or having a staff person who can build a culture and a kind of a communication environment internally that encourages people to have difficult conversations, that encourages people to bring up bad news, that doesn't discourage people from telling the truth exactly with all of its warts and its bruises and its scrapes. That's how we make progress. But many times, sometimes a facade, a hope of the reality is what's put forward, and the solution doesn't tackle that because it never actually understood what the real problem was we were trying to solve. And that climate, if you will, right, that ability to go into that conference room and to understand that I have executives, I have middle managers, and I have frontline individual contributors, and all of them have the freedom to speak, to raise up issues, and none of them has any kind of preference as it relates to the highest paid person's opinion or something like that. That's actually very difficult to build. It takes, going back to the order to disorder, it takes a significant amount of effort to build that kind of culture, to demonstrate it day after day and to model it, and then to create incentives around it so that the normal aspects around the political climate in the business, power plays, people trying to leverage, you know, kind of the subordinate nature of some of their staff, that these things don't now come in and prevent really solid, transparent communication. And I'll tell you what I look for when I go into a meeting is I look for who, for example, isn't speaking. I want to know who's at the meeting but who's silent. And then what names occur in the conversations for people who are not at the meeting? They weren't even invited. Other things I look for is who keeps interrupting other people. Maybe they don't like what they have to say, or they don't like where they think this conversation is going to go, or they just really don't like that someone else might have an idea that's better than theirs. I'm looking for that. I'm looking for who might be willing to speak, but only if they're coaxed a little bit, if they're asked, or if they're, you know, encouraged. And when they do, they speak with a nervous voice. These are aspects I'm looking for because all of these indicate that there's another challenge inside the organization beyond the technology that we're looking to solve. And it actually is the biggest killer to the project rather than the technology. So whoever you're working with, whatever staff person is leading this, as part of their discovery, as part of their really moving the needle toward a higher level of success in the project, they need to have those non-technical, intangible elements as part of their job. That I not only need you to deliver on this technical capability, but I need you to do so in a way that fosters great communication with our team, great communication with our, you know, our vendors and our partners, great communication with our stakeholders. Because unless we have that, the likelihood of our project succeeding is very, very low. So that is issue number two. So first one is poor definition of the goal, right? Do we have an agreement to know what does success look like? The second is ineffective communication and poor stakeholder management. Let's talk about the third. This one is inadequate project management practices. Now, this is the ability, for example, to recognize what we can actually accomplish in a given time period and a given budget. What can actually be packaged up and delivered within the time frame that we have? What additional requests need to be tabled and backlogged for a future time because it would add too much risk to the current project? As I see it, the project management role, a primary goal of it, is that we deliver something of value. And this is hard because people, you got to say no sometimes. You got to figure out how to say, look, we all have day jobs. And, you know, even the consultants who are working with us, they're not full-time with us necessarily. So how do we make sure and protect the success of this project so that we don't go big and then ultimately have to go home with nothing? Wouldn't it be better to say, well, can we break down that marathon into 1 or 2 miles at a time? And each time we go a couple miles, we deliver that to the team, we get feedback, and we then contemplate what is the next couple miles. And then we can also contemplate our route, because if we're running a marathon, that means we're running up and down streets. We got a lot of decisions to make about left turns and right turns and the pace that we're going to go. But if you break it down into smaller pieces, immediately you start to move down the probability curve. You're not in the 95% failure rate. You're kind of moving down towards the 45%, which is still high. But nevertheless, this is one thing that's absolutely a good direction to go with whoever you're working with, is to ask the question, can we carve out aspects of this to deliver sooner? Can we test, validate, and get this in the hands of our users so we can get feedback, we can start realizing the value as we continue on in running the marathon? That is a great question for you to ask, right, the consultant you're working with, to figure out how we can realize more of that value incrementally rather than waiting for a big bang aspect, which drives up the risk in your project significantly. Another aspect, many of these projects take 6, 12, 24, 36 months to complete. And something to consider is if you don't have strong project management practices, it means that there's a lot of insight and information in the project that's really relegated to tribal knowledge. It's within the minds and the experience of the people who are working on the project. But if a project goes 2+ years, how likely is it that the project members on both sides, whether it's on the business side, maybe some consulting partners, maybe some other people in another department, how likely is it that those people are still going to be part of the project at the 2-year mark? So how are you ensuring that when they step out and they need to not just go on vacation, but maybe they go find another job, maybe they move to a different department, maybe they get promoted? These are all great things for them, but it could be a tremendous problem for your project if you don't have good project management practices that actually figure out how do we let people come in and out of this project without actually having a significant cost and risk. And it's definitely possible, but it's more than just technical skills to make it happen. So good, we're going to talk about two more on the other side of the break. We'll talk to you soon. Now, we're talking a lot about great tools and ways for you to learn AI in a very safe environment. So I'd like to talk about the People First AI Playground. This is a location where you can go online and have specific projects that are set for you that coordinate with our show, as well as have historical projects from prior episodes. This gives you a safe place to learn how to use these tools, the terminology and vernacular around them, the places where it wouldn't be great to use them given your people-first perspective, And you can be there with like-minded people who are also trying to learn and offer their perspective. So check back. You can go to johnkline.com/the trail, and you can learn more about the People First AI Playground so you can follow along with us and really grow in your own skills to be more capable than you thought you could be and make sure that AI continues to place a cape on you rather than escape from your future job. Do you have a challenging Salesforce or AI project? DevPod is your on-demand partner for success. With decades of expertise, 30-plus Salesforce certifications, and a people-first approach, we help you reduce risk and deliver real results. From solution design and business analysis to project management, DevPod scales to your needs, no matter how big or small. Ready to supercharge your success? Call me at 626-400-6281 or visit johnkline.com/dev. I answer my own calls and would love to help you move forward. All right, welcome back, everyone. Now, we've gone through three of the top five reasons technical projects fail. And my hope is that you take these and you analyze as maybe you're the head of delivery at a consulting organization. Maybe you're a VP and an executive at a business and you have technical projects that are in your scope and that you're working on. This provides you some really good questions to go to the people you're working with and ask them specifically, how do you go about fostering great communication between our team, your team, and the individual stakeholders who know the most? I encourage anybody who's curious, you can go to Salesforce Ben and look at what I've published there. And there's a great one that says how to avoid bad partners. And you can highlight some of those questions to ask so you surface this information. Because I really want your project to be successful and not to fail for these top five reasons. So we've talked about three. The fourth one is unrealistic timelines and budgets. And this one is really challenging because it's somewhat of an evasive art. How do you really know how much something's going to cost, especially if you haven't done it before? And many of the stakeholders I've worked with over the last 25 years have not actually done something of the size that we're doing before. So it's very difficult, and they tend to lean on me to try and figure that out, which it's just hard to know. One of the most challenging things with this is actually a great opportunity. Everyone's prior experience informs their future desires. So when you don't know anything about Salesforce and you start thinking about it, you're like, well, I used to use ACT, or I used to use, the free version on HubSpot of the CRM. And so that's what your expectations and your imagination delivers to you. And if that's what you're thinking about, as soon as someone shares with you, well, on Salesforce, you can also do this and you can also do that, or you go to Dreamforce and you find out all of these amazing things, well, now you have a very different appetite for what you'd like to do. But the original budget didn't contemplate this new appetite. And so there becomes a challenge. What do you do? Well, many people consider, how can I grind my partner to give me what I want, recognizing that it's more than I asked for originally. I mean, we talked about it maybe, or it was maybe implied, but how do I get more for the same amount of money? I do not recommend that model. It's a great way to ruin relationships. I think there's a better model, and it goes back to that incrementalism of trying to figure out, how can I break my project into smaller pieces? And if I break it into smaller pieces, we can probably uncover some efficiencies by delivering these smaller pieces. We put kind of like with like and put them into themes. And maybe because of that efficiency, I can now uncover more hours within my same original budget that I can get some of this new appetite fulfilled. I can get some of these new features, new elements that I didn't think of before, I didn't know about. I can get those added to the project while protecting the budget and timeline. And the key here is respecting the fact that your project manager, your product owner, whether they're on staff or whether they're working for your consultant partner, they are on your team. When they say, I'm not sure that we can get that into this release, they're working on your behalf, trying to make sure that this is a successful project. because this is the fourth leading reason of why projects fail. So some aspects that you can ensure are in place is, first of all, a culture of listening and of yielding. So you as a tech leader and as one who's a participant can make sure that, look, when the project manager says, I'm not sure we can do that, we respect it. Doesn't mean that that's the end and that's the decision. It just means that you respect what they said and you ask them to elaborate, help them understand, or help ask them to help you understand, what do we think is the risk here? What are some trade-offs that we can make? Can we swap out some things that are maybe less important for what this is? The key here is having the attitude that when someone tells you, I'm not sure I can get that done, of thinking that just pressure, intimidation, and the grinding are just going to get things done. Because they might give the superficial appearance of getting things done, but that doesn't mean it's actually effective. Doesn't mean that users will adopt it. And if users don't adopt it and love it, then the whole project is a waste of time. It's not just about getting to the finish line. It's getting to the finish line in such a way that everybody who's exhausted from running wants to go recover and run again because they love the experience so much that they want to do it again. And everybody who then sees the software and is assigned to use it because they've been a participant, they're like, yes, we're committed to it. We want to run this race again, and we want to continually make it better. Getting that kind of commitment isn't just about dollars and cents. It's a ton of relational aspect. It's a ton of yielding and having that give and take with people and recognizing that what they say has merit, and you can ask them to back it up so you can see the details and learn more about that. Budgets. Let's talk a little bit about that. Budgets are often very arbitrary. Sometimes people have a reference point prior to this project that they're kind of leveraging, but things have changed. It's maybe a different set of technologies. It's a different time frame. The marketplace is demanding different things from people. Like, for example, you know, the omni-channel experience, that a customer who texts you, your company, expects to call your company within 5 minutes and recognize that we're all still talking the same conversation, even though I'm talking to two different people and I've talked with two different channels. Well, now imagine you take that and they're like, well, the same thing is true with Facebook Messenger, and the same thing is true with WhatsApp, and the same thing is true with your web chat, and the same thing is true with your AI bot. I want all those to be part of the same conversation. That's hard to do. And so those new and emerging expectations from customers, I mean, that's really today. Those expectations have been here for almost a decade. But it's hard to do. And so the people that are trying to help you get there, they need to be honored and they need to be listened to. And then you can pursue and you can dig and you can kind of introspect what's there to figure out what is a path that we think won't tank the success rate of this particular project. And so that is problem number four, which is unrealistic timelines and budgets. We can't be arbitrary. We got to be realistic and we got to listen to the people who know and can provide some merit as to why it's going to take what it's going to take, and recognize that it takes what it takes to do it right. There are no shortcuts. There's no magic. And AI can certainly add a lot of help as it relates to documentation and test plans and a lot of areas, but it cannot step in for the really important thinking that goes on between how do we merge the technology with our people and how do we get technology that really serves our stakeholders, provides unbelievable benefit that's irresistible to them so that they are compelled to leverage this tool for the benefit of the business once we complete it. So let's quickly talk about number five and some possible next steps for you. So the final one is lack of leadership, sponsorship, and accountability. And this one is just going to be short and sweet. It's when the leadership at the top believes that this is really just a task for the bottom and they don't provide recognition, backup, support, and engagement in the process. And everybody looks at that and observes to say, well, is this really that important? Because look, the boss doesn't even use it. The boss doesn't test it. The boss doesn't even really engage in the meetings. And what does that give permission for everyone else to do? We can put on the window dressing, like, oh, we're doing this, we're going through the motions. But really, look at our sponsors. They don't care about this. So why should I? And if they don't care about it and they're not behind it, I know that we really can't succeed because they're the ones who have to then drive all of the adoption, changed behavior, and commitments from all these other departments. And if they're not on board, I don't know that I'm willing to fight that battle. And that's a cultural problem. So those are the top five reasons why projects fail, according to data across 25,000 plus projects over three decades. And my hope is that you take this and that you analyze the projects that you're doing inside your business and identify, do I have the right people in place? Do I have the right team? And am I tracking the right metrics to highlight what really fails projects? These five things, you might have to think about different metrics, and we'll talk about that on a future show. How do we measure these metrics? Because they're not so clear as it relates to some of the technical aspects I might have expected. So we'll see you next week. Thank you. And please, 803 John Klein, power@johnklein.com. And have a great and successful week flexing your people-first power in the age of AI.